Now, when I was growing up, my parents were uneasy about comics. They weren't heavy about it. They just worried that they might be bad for you, bad for serious reading, I guess. And lots of parents back then were. But I used to love them. A mate of mine had a huge pile of Disney comics, which I used to borrow, and there were Archie comics and Superman. My guilty pleasure is I still read Phantom comics. I still do. Phantom comics. Nothing else. No other kind of comics. Just Phantom. I guess I enjoy the sense of history and the generations of Phantoms who've struggled against pirates. But really, I just love all that stuff set in the deep jungle where the Phantom triumphs over villains using his intelligence and his skill.
The man who cannot die. The ghost who walks. The Phantom. The Phantom's pledge to fight evil and injustice wherever they may be found.
Yeah, well, that would put me right off. I don't know that I hear him talking like that. I think I hear him with an Aussie accent, actually. But I wonder whether guilty pleasures still include comics as newspapers cut their pages and comics go online. Jason Chatfield is a comics buff. He's president of the Australian Cartoonists Association. That would be a nice organisation to belong to. And he's the cartoonist for Ginger Megs. Hi, Jason.
G'day, Michael. How are you?
Oh, I'm terrific. So you were born in 1984, so you're a bit younger
Correct.
Than I am. Were comics still a guilty pleasure in the 80s?
Absolutely. Yeah, very much so growing up. That was my sort of staple. I spent all of my pocket money buying Phantom comics and Spider-Man comics. And it was still very much a big thing when I was growing up.
So there were older folk in your life waggling their fingers saying, young Jason, you should be doing your homework, learning your algebra.
Yes, absolutely. I was copying out of the comics when I should have been doing homework. Although that was my mum, my dad would be the one sort of sneakily giving me Mad magazines and Phantom comics, sort of, yeah, have a read of that, you'll love it. I think that's what he grew up reading.
Ah.
So he kind of went, hey, just give this a go.
It was gendered.
Yeah, I think so. You would, by the sounds of it, if you're a Phantom fan, you would love, there's something in Sydney where it's called the Lee Falk Memorial Bengali Explorers Club. And it's a whole bunch of people with the guilty pleasure of loving Phantom comics getting together. Some quite, I mean, there's some, you know, like Kerry Chigorowski and Rodney Cavalier, and they get in the artists who did and do the Phantom, like Glenn Ford and Cy Barry and all those guys. You'd love it.
I'd love that. Lee Falk, we should explain, was the creator of Phantom. But all sorts of people have been drawing and writing Phantom since those classic days. And
that's
actually,
right.
There's a whole kind of subculture of people who know how the Phantom has changed. It's almost like human evolution. There are kind of several Phantoms living in almost parallel universes now.
Yes.
Because there are different artists with different takes on it all.
That's very, very true. I got compared to the Phantom recently, and I was deeply honoured by that comparison because Ginger Meggs has had four other artists, and someone referred to me as Kit Walker, who any Phantom, you know, comic buffs would know that that's the Phantom. That's his pseudonym. Well, that's his name. You know,
he
hands it down to his son each time he dies. So the Phantom is the ghost who walks and never dies.
Yes, I see. So you're sort of Jimmy Banks reborn in a new person.
Sure. Well, there's been four other artists before me, you see, Michael. So there was Jimmy Banks, and then he handed it on to Ron Vivian, who then died and handed it on to Lloyd Piper, who then died and handed it on to James Kemsley, who 3 days before he died asked me to take it on. So there was no skull cave involved.
Everyone who does this dies.
Yeah. That's true. It's like the Superman curse. Yes.
Has Ginger Meggs changed? I mean, if we look at your Ginger Meggs and go back to the original Ginger Meggs, have you introduced an extra tuft of hair or...?
certainly not an extra tuft of hair. I've made him, I mean, every cartoonist has made him more relevant to the contemporary readership, because if he was still doing things and talking like he was in the 20s, he would have been dropped years ago. But no, it's very much the same character. All I've done is this, as I say, like the other artists, I've contemporized his language and the atmosphere a little bit. You know, kids aren't running billy carts down hills quite as much.
I was going
to
say, because the Ginger Meggs I remember is sort of a Ginger Meggs of kicking a can along the street and playing with billy carts. And,
yeah,
you know,
and he still does that. He still does that, but just not quite as often, you know.
Fences always seem to be in bad state of disrepair. You'd be walking along the street and there'd always be fence palings missing.
no, don't get me wrong. He's still like a middle-lower kind of, you know, he doesn't have enough money for an iPhone or anything like that. He still has to, you know, weasel his way into getting things. But, you know, he's still very much that Aussie larrikin character. Only, you know, it's set in a more contemporary time so that, you know, kids, it's more accessible to kids now, but it's also accessible to contemporary readers of any generation. So, because because he just turned 90 last year, he's 90 years old, there are generations who know their own Ginger Megs. So it's kind of their little guilty pleasure of growing up with their, you know, they had a Ginger Megs that they knew. And he's always the same character, but it's a different incarnation, if you will.
I know he was popular with soldiers during the Second World War.
Correct. Yeah, they used to draw him on the side of the planes and the bombs. I've got these amazing photos that Mike Bowers sent me of, Australian Air Force drawing Ginger Megs on the side of, you know, ships and planes and things. And just, you know, he was an icon of, you know, if there were tough times, particularly in the Depression, in the war, you know, he was this bastion of, yeah, you'll be right. Things will get better, you know. It can't be too much worse than this.
I guess, too, if you're out and facing all the horror of war, he'd remind you of home and childhood and world you might like to get back to.
Yeah, very much so, very much so. And Ginger Megs has very much always been that character. So he's continuing on in modern times, despite the sort of inverted commas death of newspapers in print. He's still continuing on and finding new readers because of that very... That very characteristic, that sort of, you know, positive attitude in tough times.
Are there Ginger Megs collectors?
Oh, yeah, are there ever? Amazing, yes. In fact, on the ABC's collectors, there's a guy called Barry Gom who has the biggest Ginger Megs collection in the world. He's got every single Sunbeams annual. He's got an entire collection of all the memorabilia and statues, the musical, the movie. He's got everything. And we just had an exhibition at the Bunker Cartoon Gallery in Coffs Harbour with every single bit of that. And they're a very passionate group of people, the Ginger Megs collectors.
And Jason, what's your own favourite comic strip, getting away from Ginger Megs?
Sure. Well, if outside of Ginger Megs, I'd say it would be Calvin and Hobbes. I really, really enjoyed reading it growing up, and even now it's timeless. You look back, I mean, he stopped drawing and writing, Bill Watterson, that is, drawing and writing Calvin and Hobbes years ago, and is very much a recluse, so no one really hears from him. But you read it today, and it's just as pertinent, and just as it's beautifully well written, but also beautifully drawn. And I always took a lot of inspiration from that growing up. That and, you know, the comic books like Mad Magazine and Spider-Man and all those guys.
In your mind, you make a distinction between the little comic strip that we see in the newspaper and the comics that are actually presented in book form?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, you can have collections of comic strip in book form, but they are two very different streams of... They're both called sequential art, but they're both very, very different styles. So, you know, a comic book is made into a movie, and it's amazing because it's all about the structure of the story of usually a hero and coming into things like having special powers and how to use those with responsibility, whereas with a comic strip, you know, it's more focused on very quick snapshots of humour or a quick story, and even, a sequential one like The Phantom, say, is very much a bit of a snapshot. You've got three or four panels to tell a story really quickly. So all the... Not as a hard and fast rule, but generally any comic strip that's turned into a movie, like Garfield or Fred Bassett or something like that, done very, very badly. Any comic book like Spider-Man or The Avengers or Superman or Batman are massive box office hits because they're a very different style of sequential art.
Well, Jason, it's been great to catch up with you, and we'll both go and enjoying our own guilty pleasure.
Sure. Thanks very much for having me.
Jason Chatfield there. He's the president of the Australian Cartoonist Association, and he's the cartoonist for Ginger Megs.